We are, for those of you who are visiting or who have missed out on a couple of weeks, we're still busy with the book of Revelation. We're going through Revelation basically a chapter or two at a time. And I want to read a couple of things now, but I want to remind us that when we're dealing with the book of Revelation, our basic premise is that it's a simple book from a pastor to his congregation. John is writing to the seven churches in what was known as Asia Minor, Western Turkey today, and he's encouraging them through a period of persecution and suffering. And he reiterates the gospel, basically, and he disciples them through this book. So we're not looking for the furniture of heaven. We're not trying to break the code of some mystic thing in Revelation. It's a plain and simple book about God's pastor caring for his flock. So today we're going to look at heaven. And let me just say straight off before I read. Heaven is not a place you go when you die. Let's just get that straight right at the beginning. Heaven is not a place you go when you die. Heaven is the fullness of the presence of God. Maybe I should just say amen and we go home now. But in essence, that's what we're going to look at this morning. So I want to read, first of all, from Matthew chapter 3. So the last part of Matthew chapter 3. Verse 13 to 17. Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to be baptized by John. But John tried to deter him, saying, "I need to be baptized, you, and do you come to me?" He questions him. Jesus replied, "Let it be so for now. It is proper for us to do this to fulfill all righteousness." And John consented. As soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him, and a voice from heaven saying, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." So that's the first part I want to read this morning. The second one, we've read twice already. But I wonder whether you've noticed the heavy emphasis on heaven in the Lord's Prayer. "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And then we go to Revelation 21. And I'm going to read, I don't know, five or six verses, seven verses maybe. "I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there was no longer sea. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men,'" or the living place, or the tent of God is amongst men, "and he will live among them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be among them. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will no longer be death. There will no longer be mourning, or crying, or pain. The first things have passed away. And he who sits on the throne said, 'See, I am making all things new.' And he said, 'Write, for these words are faithful and true.' And he said, 'It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of water of life without cost. He who overcomes shall inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son.'" So, heaven is not a place you go to when you die. Heaven is the fullness of the presence of God. And it's important to say that it's the fullness of the presence of God. So Jesus comes out of the waters of baptism. And the reason to read that is that there's something that happens in that moment at the beginning of his ministry. What happens? We just read it, guys. Heavens are opened, and there's a voice. The sound of the Father who says, "This is my Son whom I love. I'm really, 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 really pleased with him," or something to that effect. The opening of the heaven is the beginning of Jesus' ministry. It's when he comes to show who God is. And John uses identical vocabulary when he's writing to the churches in Asia Minor. He tells them that there's a door open into heaven. That's chapter 4, verse 1, where he says, "I saw a door open into heaven." And don't forget, when he's talking to the churches in chapter 2 and chapter 3, how does he end off talking to the churches? Chapter 3, verse 20, 21. "See, I stand at the door and knock." And he says, "If any man hears my voice and come and opens the door to me, I will come into him and I will dine with him. I will dine with him and he with me and she." When the heavens are opened, we are able to see and hear. In other words, there is revelation. There is the mystery is drawn apart. And we are able to enter into a place of the presence of God. And what we see and hear is the rule of God in operation. God's kingdom coming. And God's words, in a sense, in our language. So the word in when we see the word heaven in the New Testament, we must just stop for a second and say, there is more than meets the eye going on here. Because we are so accustomed to saying, this is all that we can see. So when we come to the table, it's easy to come here and say, all we see is this piece of bread and this representation of wine, because we are caring, lovely people, and we didn't put any alcohol in here this morning. But there is something going on that lies behind that. And let's say this. In Hebrew and Greek, and I'm not going to bother you with the Hebrew words and the Greek words this morning, because now I'm quite self-conscious that we've got Greek people here and my pronunciation is appalling. But the point is, the word in Hebrew and in Greek is the same word. It means two things in both languages. So it means both the sky and it means heaven. And we in English have got two words which we translate that single word into. And here's what we do. We have ripped them apart. We have ripped the natural order and the spiritual order, and we've separated them and made them two separate entities, where we say there are physical material things and there are spiritual deeper things. And what you have when you read in the Greek New Testament is that there is a slight ambiguity. The context tells you or hints to you whether it should be the physical sky or whether it should be the spiritual thing of heaven. So, in Hebrew and in Greek, there is this sense that when you say sky, there is a whisper of heaven behind it. Or when you say heaven, there is a whisper of earth behind it. In other words, these things are intertwined and umbilically linked. We have, with our language, torn them apart, and it's had repercussions for the way we see things. And so that's where the heresy of Gnosticism came in, which said, basically, the material is bad and the spiritual is good, and by the time you've worked out your salvation, you'll get rid of all the physical stuff and you will be a glorious physical being. That's exactly the opposite of what God is doing and what the future looks like for us. So, when we come to John's final vision of heaven, it's not the ending of things. It's a new beginning. It's a new beginning of putting back together, reconciling everything that God has created that's good and making it all one again. There's a unity in terms of the future that allows for us to understand how God created the world good right at the beginning. Now, I've already, as usual, I've got away from myself. I got excited about that. I was going to say a whole lot about the danger of focusing too much on the material or too much on the spiritual, but I'm going to just assume that that's part of what we understand. So John mixes the meaning of heaven. Because if we go back to the Lord's Prayer, for example, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. What he's doing is he's pulling the two together again. He's making sure that heaven is not this remote thing that is somewhere out there, that if you're a good bloke or if you do nice things, girls, that you will be rewarded with a place in heaven. Heaven is not a place that you go to when you die. It's the presence of God. It's the reign of God. It's the rule of God in my life as he's present with us here and now today. And as we were singing that last song about the Spirit of God being amongst us, that's the truth. I'm sure that you won't get offended if I tell you that you are a motley crew. Well, we knew you would, Cecil, but but the truth is that God is lives within us. God is here in his risen power. He sent his Spirit to lead and direct us in the same way that he did Jesus when he was here representing his Father and showing us what the Father looked like. We're not waiting for a rapture to take place so that we can see heaven. We're not going there when we die. Heaven is. Heaven is. Right now. And we have glimpses of it when we see the presence of God in our own lives, when we experience the power of God in our own lives, when we see the way in which he organizes and does stuff with us and for us and through us. In other words, heaven is barely out of range of your senses right now. So life is not an unmitigated disaster, guys. It's not just a mess. It's not just chaotic. I love that passage in Psalm 51. Is it verse 10, I think it is, where in the message it says, God, shape a Genesis week out of the chaos of my life. That's heaven. So heaven doesn't promise anything other than what we have already received by faith, the fullness of what God is through faith. Everything that Jesus is and does is given to me. I celebrate it as I eat with you and drink with you this morning. And all of that is made present and available to me right now. But there's something more that's coming. What John is looking forward to as he writes to the churches in Revelation is this: it will be completed. There will be no longer a sense in which we can't discern things. It will all be revealed. It will all be made mature and complete at the end of time when he wraps everything up. And the interesting thing is that it will be here. The surprise, as you read in Revelation 21 and 22, is that heaven is a city. So as you read, we didn't read that part of the passage, but as you read through in chapter 2, it says the new Jerusalem will come out of heaven, and then it goes on to say further on what it looks like. And other religions and our popular, what has come into our popular thing as Christians, which has got no basis, is that it will be a return to the garden. Because somehow we think, oh, where it's natural and where it's pretty and where it's all as it should be, we'll return to that. And so we come back in like a big loop right to the beginning again. And what God is saying is that even though cities are messy and noisy and full of all kinds of nonsense, God redeems the whole of creation. And he uses you and I to redeem the whole of creation. We think that heaven will be as far away from a smelly, dirty city as possible, but it's not going to be. You see, what John is saying and what God is saying to us is this, and this I will read because for me this is really, really important. We enter heaven not by escaping what we don't like, but by the sanctification of the place where God has placed us. There is no escapism in the whole concept of heaven. I'll read that again. We enter heaven not by escaping what we don't like, but by the making holy, the sanctification of the place where God has placed us. Oh dear. The grass is always greener on the other side. I wish I had George's job. I wish I lived where so-and-so was. I wished I had someone else's bank balance. I wish, I wish, I wish. And we long for what we don't have. But what you have is what you have been given. All the warts and bumps included. And the sanctification, the making holy, the bringing of heaven to earth, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, is your responsibility, my responsibility, where I am. And we hanker for something else that is better than what we've got. I was just, as I was going through this morning again, I just thought, remember Henry Nouwen? He was an amazing man who was set to be, he was touted as going to be Cardinal of the Americas, and there were some whispers that he would be the first American pope. He was that kind of man of stature, powerful intellect, a great man of compassion, a man of incredible breadth and depth. And at a point, God says to him, I want you to go. And he went to a place called La'ach, and he cared for the rest of his life for one single, highly dysfunctional human being, whom he woke up and cleaned and dressed and fed for the rest of his life. And people were shocked and horrified. Look at the life you've thrown away. Look at this, look at that. The truth was, he answered what God called him to do, and he brought heaven to that person. We have such visions of grandeur, such sense of we want to change. We have a Messiah complex in a sense, and we want more and more and more and more of everything, mainly for ourselves. And half of it has to do with our ego. And when it comes to this, what John is saying to them is, you are planted where you are. Your responsibility is to bring heaven to where you are, in your family, in your village, in your town, at your workplace, with your neighbors. And I keep coming back to this neighbor thing. Your neighbors are the things that we have to be aware that our light is to shine where we are. That's what we created for. That we bring heaven to earth. So it's not just a holy and wonderful prayer that we pray around the table or in unison on a Sunday. It's actually the way in which we embody heaven in the way that we live amongst the people that we're with. We bring heaven, not only enter it, we bring heaven not by escaping what we don't like, but by the making holy of the place where God has placed us. We want a long weekend from responsibility, basically. But heaven is formed from places where there are dirty streets and gang wars and knife crime and Brexit, uncertainty, strange elections. That's where heaven is formed. So heaven is a holy city living in harmony with God. Heaven is a virgin bride, also alive with intimacy with God. And the city and the bride are us. We are the city. We are the bride. And there are, as you read through in chapter 21 and 22, there are 12 foundation stones and 12 gates. And without being too elaborate about all of that, what does the 12 symbolize for you?
Kingdom.
Tribes, apostles, gates, places where you walk through and enter into. But basically what, when we look at it, look at the early passages of Genesis, and look at the ancestors that we have in Israel, a deceitful, conniving, murderous bunch are in your genealogy. Look at the apostles, wavering, cowardly, questioning, all kinds of different things. And even, I was just thinking about this week. If I had to ask you this morning, the 12 that Jesus called to him, quickly, let's name them. Peter, James, John.
Matthew, Simon.
How much do we know of Thaddeus? Have you ever thought about poor old Thaddeus? Where is Thaddeus? You see, even the 12 that Jesus picked, Matthias, who replaced
Jesus.
There you go. Point is, Jesus didn't pick Batman, Superman, Iron Man. He didn't. He chose Peter. He chose Thaddeus because he was saying, these redeemed people are the stones with which I build the New Jerusalem. You and I are the salvation of the city. You and I are the ones who bring heaven to earth. When we are obedient to the will of God, when we listen to what he has to say to us, we make holy the places which we live and work and have relationship. It's interesting how little is written on heaven, and it's all kind of, mostly it's the Daily Mirror and the Daily Mail cartoon strip that has to do with heaven more than anything else nowadays. Yet heaven is what we're about. Three things quickly to just say. When you read, and it's good to go back and read in chapter 21 and 22, there are three features of heaven that we need to just reflect on when we look at it. And the first thing is symmetry. Symmetry. What's symmetry?
Balance.
Everything is harmonious. So essentially, it's perfectly proportioned. It's entire. It's complete. In other words, it's holy. And there is nothing awkward, nothing broken, nothing incomplete about heaven. And that's why we say the word for peace in Hebrew is irene. I mean, that's in Greek. I got that one right. But shalom in Hebrew. And it has the idea of not just peace as in, I've had peace at last because all the noise has stopped kind of thing. Peace in the sense of completeness, wholeness, fullness. And that's what we are called to bring. So when we go out into the world that we're involved with, we are bringers of peace, which means everything is harmonious, it's complete, it's in order, it's reconciled, it's united, it's caring, it's loving, it's all that kind of stuff. Now, okay, you say, you clearly don't know me well then. Because when I go, I'm often not peaceful and harmonious and in all proportion. I'm all scattered and broken and difficult things are going on. We're all a work in progress. But this is what heaven coming to earth looks like. And when we bring that where we go, Your kingdom comes. Second thing is this, that if you look in chapter 22, verse 5, it says, and there shall be no longer any night, and they shall not have need of a lamp or light, the light of the sun even, because God will illumine them, and they will reign forever and ever. You see, there is complete revelation. All the darkness is gone. And when we move into a situation, we are to be bringers of revelation and light and joy. And darkness goes. That's why the church loses who they are, and we lose who we are if we are not involved with issues of justice and where there are poor and broken and damaged people. Because that's our role, to bring heaven into those situations. And then, thirdly, could we say lots of stuff about light and revelation? Just this maybe, one aside, is that the stones that are part of the whole New Jerusalem, there's a picture of gold and precious stones. All that that does is reflect the light and refract the light. And that's what our purpose is. We are not the light. We are just there to reflect it and refract it. He is the light. And then the third thing, if you look in chapter 22, verse 1 and 2, it says this. And he showed me a river of the water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb, in the middle of its street. And on either side of the river there was a tree of life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. That's clearly a reference back to Ezekiel. And all it's saying is there is incredible fertility and fruitfulness and abundance and blessing. And again, there's lots and lots that we could say. But that's our role, guys. That's what John is encouraging the church in Asia Minor to say to them, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Wherever you go, you are the light. Wherever you go, the bringer of light, you are the one who brings abundance and joy. You are the one who brings harmony and wholeness and peace. You are... Don't have to say anymore. I'll end with this. What did Jesus say as he exited? So we looked at the beginning of his ministry, where the heavens are opened and the Father says, this is my Son whom I love and I'm well pleased with it. What were the last words when he left his ministry? Sorry?
It's finished.
Exactly. It's finished. It's done, if you like. It's complete. There is nothing more that needs to happen. What happened at that point? What happened when Jesus says, it's finished, and he gave up his last breath, and he died? What happened?
The veil of the temple.
Bingo.
From the top down.
Bingo. Yeah. So what happens on the other side of the veil? What was the veil there for in the temple? What is the symbolism that is there at the death of Jesus? You see, in the structure that God gave for the temple, there is the outer court, and then there's the inner court, and then there's the holy place, where there's the altar of showbread, and there's all the stuff that is there. And then there is a veil. And behind the veil is the Holy of Holies, where the presence of God is. And what Jesus was doing, what God was saying was, it is just such a magnificent image. He's saying, it's not just one high priest, one day of the year, on the Day of Atonement, who can wriggle in with a rope tied around his neck, I mean, his leg, rather, slip of the tongue, and a bell so that if he fell down and died in the presence of God, they could drag him out when the bell stopped making a noise. The veil is ripped open like this, and we have access into the presence of God. There is a door open in heaven. That's what John is saying in chapter 4, verse 1 in Revelation. The veil has ripped. God has taken it and he has ripped it open. He said, we don't need this any longer because what's happened on the cross now gives us access into the fullness of all that God has, his presence. And Jesus comes back and he says, you see, this is what's happened. Now go and wait because I'm sending you myself. And the Holy Spirit is given to us so that we understand that God is with us, in us, that the veil has torn in two. It is so exciting. I just could go on and on and on. Heaven is not a place you go to when you die. It's the fullness of the presence of God.